Hello, everyone. We're just waiting for everyone to file into the room. We'll get started in just a moment. All right, it looks like we have leveled off. So we'll go ahead and get started. My name is John LaPaca, and I'm an editor for STEM Mathematics at Wiley, and I'm also your host for this session. And welcome to Communication, Connections, and Conceptual Clarity. Our speaker today will be Dr. Lee Singleton, who is an instructor at Whatcom Community College. Without further ado, I will turn it over to Dr. Lee Singleton.
All right, thanks, John. So the title of this, Communication, Connections, and Conceptual Clarity, has to do with some work I've been doing in some Calc 2 classes over the last couple of years. This is part of a grant my collaborators, Eric Davishall and Todd Haskell, are both from different departments. Eric's from the engineering department and Todd is from the psychology department at Western. The idea that we're kind of looking at with this is, do students learn concepts or procedures? And so the idea is, you know, there's a lot of procedures that there are to be learned, you know, when you're integrating, especially, you know, looking at area, you know, subtracting a couple of functions, and then how do you integrate that? But it can also be, you know, concepts, the integral is the area under a curve, or integration is adding a bunch of small things. One thing that I like to think of is, you know, procedures are kind of like a flow chart. You know, you start here, you go down, you may have a decision to make, go left or right. But concepts are kind of like cobwebs. Like there's this central idea that you have, and there may be different things stemming off of that. So there may be, you know, this idea of adding up small things. There may be this idea of actually computing the integration, you know, by hand, maybe doing it numerically with some bounds. But they all tie into that central idea. And if you're missing, you know, a part of it, you really don't have a complete picture of the concept. So this is kind of a typical question that you'll see in Calc 1 or 2, depending on you're on semesters or quarters. I'm on quarters. So this is in our Calc 2 class. Just find the area bounded by, you know, this parabola. And students can go through and usually get that, you know, after a little bit, not too bad. There's another question here. There's a line through the origin that divides the region bounded by the parabola and the x-axis into two regions with equal area. What's the slope of that line? And students have a lot of difficulty with this. One is just actually drawing out the picture. So that is what you're looking at. What's the slope of that line that divides that parabola into two equal areas? But then trying to set that up, they really have a hard time because it's not kind of your standard question of just put in the function in the integral and go through the computations. So they really have to think about it. And even after we go through it in class, sometimes I'll put like on a review, the same sort of question, but with a vertical line instead of a slanted line. And they still try to set it up just like this one with the slanted line. So a lot of students like to follow procedures, but getting them to understand the concepts can be a challenge. So part of what we've been working on with the grant is assessing, you know, do they know these concepts? And so I have what are called concept check questions, a few of them that I've developed through here. It looks something like this, and these aren't like, you know, I would say brand new in terms of the ideas. It's just a multiple choice with an explain part. So they choose the answer and then they have to explain their reasoning below it. Usually I'll give them 1 point for the choice you know, correct or incorrect, they get 1 point correct, zero if not. But then the explanation, 4 points for correct reasoning, 2 points if it's partially correct reasoning, 0 points if it's just incorrect. So this would be a typical question, like here's a curve that I'm not expecting them to be able to get the function off of this, but I am expecting them to be able to rank the integrals, you know, lowest to highest. And so I used to have commas, but people kept switching the orders and say, oh, I accidentally put them backwards. So I started putting the less thans and I don't get that as much as I used to. So the idea is that, you know, after points have been awarded, 5 points is they picked the correct selection and they justified it appropriately. 4, they had correct reasoning, but for some reason they didn't get their selection correct. That is pretty rare. Sometimes they'll just like forget to bubble in an answer, or maybe their explanation is all the way correct and then they just pick the incorrect response. On those, like I said, sometimes switching the order if you're ranking things, that'll happen. The correct choice selection for 3, but only partially correct reasoning to justify the response. 2, if they didn't choose the correct thing, but they were partially correct when they're explaining their choice. And then 1, if they, you know, just guess, but they have no correct reasoning, and 0 if everything's wrong. So that's kind of the point breakdown afterward. All right, so I have a poll for you guys to try here. So you got a function f of x strictly decreasing on the entire interval a to b. Which of the following is in order from smallest to largest? So go ahead and try that if you want to launch the poll. And these are Riemann's sums. Got a couple of responses. Got several responses still coming in. And I will say every choice has been selected so far. So all right. I'll go ahead and looks like we're kind of stabilized. I'll go ahead and end that. So the correct response is C. So if it's decreasing on the interval, then you're gonna have, you know, so you had a function that's decreasing. Your right-hand sums are gonna be the smallest because they're using points from the right. Your left-hand sums are gonna be the biggest. And if you're using more rectangles, those are gonna be more accurate as far as representing the integral. So that's gonna be choice C. All right. So there's choice C right there. Here's one more for you. You can go ahead and, so you got a graph that's right there. And you want to know the function gives the velocity of an object, V of T, which does not represent the displacement. So go ahead and try that one. All right, looks like responses are coming in. Again, notice with this one, you don't have to actually, you know, calculate. The idea is to look at, you know, what is the concept behind this? If I have a velocity graph, you know, what is displacement going to be in terms of, say, you know, you can think of it as areas or however you like, but you kind of have to translate between these different things of the equations, the graphs, what you're supposed to do with each of those. Right. Again, we have, I think, every choice selected here. I know some of you joining, you know, may not have done Calc 2 for a while, or may not even teach Calc 2, so it's fine. All right, looks like it's stabilized, so I'm going to go ahead and end the poll. So this one should not be A. I don't know why it says A. Might have had an error there. It should be choice B does not represent the displacement on that one. So if you're looking at this, you have this area plus this area on top. The area below is negative, and it should count as negative, but you're subtracting that negative in that second integral there. So that one is not correct. The absolute value on this one, the V of t would be positive after I do the integral. We got a bunch of positive area, a little bit of negative here. The overall result's positive. The absolute value on the outside is just going to keep it positive right there. And then the top one, choice A, is, of course, just the regular definition of displacement. So that one, sometimes students might, you know, they may not see that not and say, well, this one should be displacement. And so sometimes you'll get, that's where, you know, giving some points in the reasoning can kind of help with that sort of thing. All right. One thing that I do like about these is, you know, they can't just easily type this into Google, things like that, especially right now, you know, being online. I like them in class as well, because they can't just like look over and see what choice somebody's picking. Or they can, but it's only maybe a point. But it's going to be a lot harder to copy down the reasoning and that sort of thing as well. All right. So some responses to this that I got from students, and this is in the Riemann sum order, the first question that we had. So this is this quarter, fall 2020. 63%, you know, got everything correct on that one. 17 had some partially correct reasoning, but not the correct choice. And then 21, just everything was, you know, incorrect choice, incorrect reasoning on those. You'll notice on this last one, that one's a trickier question. 29% got everything correct. A lot of people, you know, picked that absolute value in just because they saw, oh, absolute value, that means that that's going to be total distance, not displacement. But they're not really looking at how things are interacting, you know, where's the absolute value in terms of that. So so there's a lot more with just partially correct reasoning on that one. And if you guys have questions, you know, feel free to ask as we go through. This is another type of question that I've given. It's not the multiple choice with explain, but it is, you know, here's a graph and, you know, what is the displacement, total distance, during which 1 minute interval does the person gain the most distance? At what time during the first 9 minutes will the person be furthest from their starting position when t is zero? So, and average velocity. So all of these are really good questions, you know, based on not just a function that they're given, but the graph, and having to kind of tie in these different representations that that they give. So rather than just find the area or find the integral, kind of tying in the velocity, displacement, total distance with finding area under the curve, you know, both of those together. I like those type of questions. So the underlying idea on these is this idea called representational competence. And it's first coined by Cosman and Russell in 1997. The ability to use different representations of a concept as appropriate for learning, problem solving, and communication. And so representations, we're thinking of pictures, diagrams, narratives, numeric, symbolic, concrete, different graphs, things like that. And if you have expertise, then you're able to transfer between all of these, and you might know which one's most appropriate, you know, for a problem that you're looking at. And novice users kind of limit the use of representations. So they think of, oh, area under curve, that's this type of problem. And they don't necessarily connect it to a lot of the other types of problems that they see. So that really gets at sort of that underlying meaning. Do they understand the concept or just the procedures? So this NSF project that I was on, we had several research questions. So we're developing models, physical models for students to use in the class, and some learning activities that also go with those. And the engineering professor is doing that in statics. I'm doing that in integral calculus on quarters. That's basically all integration, so we don't split that between Calc 1 and 2. It's all in Calc 2. Second goal, assess the effectiveness of the models for improving representational competence and identifying some of the characteristics of modeling activities that make them effective. So that's sort of the overall arching plans of that project. Some representations that you'll see in integral calculus, right? So just narrative language, you got this region bounded by a parabola, you're rotating it, that sort of thing. Symbolic, you know, equations that you might get, graphical representations, 2D and 3D, and of course, numeric calculations that come out. So all five of these kind of represent the same thing, the narrative, the symbolic, you know, setup, the graphs, and the final result that you would get right there. So they're all tied to that same problem. Some course goals that I had just kind of on my own, make classes more interactive and less lecture heavy. So that's the idea behind the interactive note sheets that they have to go through to build conceptual understanding through better communication, conceptual clarity, and connections between the different representations. To help students develop better visualization skills. They've shown in a lot of STEM classes, the better students' visualization skills, the more success they're likely to have as they go through different, especially engineering. There's a lot of research in that area. And then to determine if the tactile models contribute to better student performance over just the active learning alone. So there's a lot of research that shows active learning is better than lecture. So it didn't really feel right to compare some of this model use with activities to just a straight lecture, but just to really see if the models themselves are having any effect. So here's a few sample models. So these I use when we do centroids. So this is a balance beam that they've been using pennies. I'm kind of redesigning that now that we got a chain shortage. It's always evolving. But they can move it around, right, and see, you know, where things are going to balance, compute center of mass. So this is a 1D. Then we move into 2D and look at, you know, these laminar shapes. And these are 3D printed objects that students can use. They can put it on so they calculate. They're supposed to put like a piece of tape over and then mark where it is and then put it on the stand, see if that actually balances out on those. These are used for volumes, so volumes of revolution. So my colleague calls these the Christmas ornaments, but these are all the same parabola, but just rotated around different axes to either get this bigger shape or the smaller one. And then either using the red one as discs, the blue one is washers, and the green and yellow are shells. So the red and yellow are actually the same volume, but just using either discs or shells. Same with the blue and green, same volume, but using washers or shells for those two. And they do come apart, so you can actually like manipulate and open up the that purple piece that's right over here on the right for that green one with the shells. You can actually unroll it, see it's a rectangle. And then we use that when we're deriving the calculations that we're going to need for the shell formula. This one, volume by cross section. So this is kind of a cover that goes on top. So you can think of it as a solid object. And then that lifts off and you got all the slices. And there's squares in the picture. There's also some equilateral triangles, semicircles that they can change out, kind of visualize those. Some resources, if you're interested in printing some of these out or the activity sheets, it's right here, grasptemath.wordpress.com, integral-calculus. And this is being updated. So, you know, if there's something that's not there that you want to see, it is being updated as we speak, probably through this quarter and next quarter especially. There's a lot of files that are changing. I'll explain a little bit later. So that has the guided notes, activity sheets, and some links to models that are used. They're mostly STL files that are used for 3D printing. All right, so some measurement instruments that I've been using as part of this project is, like I said, the concept questions with the multiple choice and explain, and then also some student surveys. So especially with active learning, sometimes there can be some pushback from students. So we're measuring, you know, student reactions to having those guided note activity sheets and how they felt the models helped them with communication, conceptual clarity, and the connections between representations. So here's a few more concept check questions. And I just included everything I used. We may, you know, blow through some of these pretty fast, but you can get the PowerPoint off the Wiley app or the website afterward. So this is one that I asked for centroids. You got four equally spaced weights sitting on a bar. The bar has negligible weight. Which region would you find the center of mass? And so this was fall 2019. I had a lot of people kind of picking, like, you know, in the middle or somewhere that wasn't appropriate with the reasoning here in region two. So I kind of changed that for winter. So divided up that middle into two and three, and then had the border of two and three as an option for that one. And that, you know, I don't really like picking the right choice for the wrong reason. It's not my favorite thing to deal with students on. So if there's anything I can do to have the right choice, you know, have just the right explanation go with it, the majority of the time I'll do that. So this was kind of an easy fix. I just, you know, divided that middle region in half and then changed the choices on those. And it's gone much better after that. This is another one. So the region with uniform density is shown. Where would you find the centroid of the region? So again, I changed some of the choices fall 2019. I basically had all the axes, not on the axis or the origin. There's a lot of people picking like quadrant one or quadrant four. So especially quadrant one, they would pick. It should be right there on the positive x-axis. So change those choices for winter 2020. Most people were not picking anything here on the left just because, you know, there's a lot more mass at a greater distance here on the right. So so that's another change that I made on that one. This one, another centroid one, where would you find the centroid of this region? So I had this one at first for fall 2019. It is in quadrant one, but people were picking quadrant one just because they're like, oh, the square is bigger, so it's got to be in quadrant one, which isn't really true. So I wanted to kind of change it so that that reasoning didn't hold up. So this is the new one for winter 2020 on that guy. And this one, the center of mass actually moves to quadrant two just with flipping that triangle around. So here they're kind of using the idea of some symmetrical arguments, you know, So they might say like, well, this, you know, triangle here and this one kind of balance out. So they're looking at like left to right and up and down. Where would the center of mass be for those guys? So those are all before the exam. So I give those either on a quiz or, you know, usually online quiz. So they can look at those at some point. And then look at the responses, try to give feedback before the actual exam. And these are the questions that I put on the actual exam. So there's two with centroids, this one on the left, this one on the right. And then there's this one in the middle on hydrostatic force. So that one, we don't have, at least not yet, models that we used, but it's just a good question that I like to ask on the hydrostatic forces. So, you know, which force is greater on window A or window B? And they don't have to, you know, really do a calculation. I'm just looking for, you know, the deeper you go, there's more, you know, force, the more pressure. A has more area down lower, so it's got to be window A. You would be surprised how many don't pick window A. They pick, you know, it's the same, or they have some weird convoluted thinking that the water is actually pushing down on the windows, and so B has, you know, more because it's got a bigger top. So there's weird stuff that happens when you see the explanations, but that's kind of good, you know, I think, for seeing where their reasoning is not quite right and, you know, even improving your course the next time. Let's go ahead and do one more poll here. So so this one right here, go ahead and try this one. Where is the center of mass for this object? Box A, box B, box C, box D. All right, several responses coming in. There's two choices that are Nick and Tuck right now, so. And I think it's kind of leveled out. So I'm gonna go ahead and end it. So B and D are kind of right there, vying for first place. All right, the correct choice should be B. All right, so looking at the center of mass, if you put a dividing line, you know, down the middle between AC and BD, then the one on the right has more mass and, you know, kind of at the same distances, so that one is gonna have the centroid on the right. So B or D on that one. And then if you put a dividing line between the AB and the CD box, there is more mass on the bottom, but it's not at a greater distance. So you remember with centroids, you have to think of moments with mass times distance. So there's actually more mass at a larger distance on the top. And it's not that, you know, much less of a mass than it is here. So the distance is really going to carry it up here into choice B. So that's that one. So this is trying to get students to think of, you know, when they're thinking of centroids, a lot of them just think of area or that sort of thing, and not the distance from the fulcrum. So this is what you're trying to get at, is to really push them toward that line of reasoning on these guys. All right, let's see. So here's some student results. So winner 20, this was a face-to-face class. So this was about 32%, got everything correct. They picked D. A large portion picked, or I should say picked B is correct. A large portion picked D, and the reasoning was that you had to have the center of mass actually in the object, right? So not kind of out in space floating around. And so they just ruled out A and B automatically on that one. So I knew after that, I needed to kind of revisit that idea. Like, and I looked through some of the worksheets, and sure enough, there were no examples that had the center of mass outside of the object. So I went back, I put a few of those in there where the center of mass actually got located outside the object. And these were the results for this past quarter fall. 35% were, so pretty similar, got it correct. A lot more got it correct, but for kind of incorrect reasoning. So at least they're not thinking though, oh, B is out because it's not in the object. So they were just thinking, oh, there's a lot more mass here on the upper right. So it's just going to be pulled toward the upper right. But they didn't really explain a lot of some of the details that went with that. They're just like, oh, there's more mass over here. Or they said there's more mass on top, so it's going to be B, but there's actually more mass underneath. So kind of a miscalculation on that part. But a lot, I think, better spread than before, right? And there's several slides that I have here that I'm probably just going to blow through. You guys can look at them later if you like. So the hydrostatic force one, it's this guy. So pretty even across the board for a lot of those. This one's kind of interesting. So the balance beam question, fall, I used the models. Winter was just the activity sheets, no models. And then, of course, we went online. So now we're just doing online. So the online, much worse in terms of getting this question correct, using the right reasoning than the ones that were face-to-face. They have the same, basically the same activity sheet and the same resources as the one that was face-to-face in winter. They're just doing a lot worse. I don't know if they're not using the activity sheets and just trying to do something else, but kind of interesting right there. There's several volume ones. Like I said, I'm just gonna kind of go through some of these pretty quickly. So this one, they're again ranking this one. The idea is not for them to calculate it out, although some do, but to think about, you know, how much distance is there from your areas to the axis of rotation. So the closer you are, the smaller your object's gonna be, the further you are, the bigger volume you're going to have on those. So that's kind of the idea on that one. This one I really like a lot. There's a similar one on the exam. So just here's what a student's doing. They're dividing it using vertical rectangles. Which method are they using? So disk, shell with respect to X or respect to Y for the integration. And then they got to explain that out. This one, so that you're building with cross sections. Perpendicular to the x-axis that are either rectangles, equilateral triangles, or semicircles, and just calculating the volume off of those. So again, they can't really put in equations to just calculate, so they have to reason out like which of these areas is going to be, you know, the biggest. So that's the idea on that one. But they have to use kind of this generic B, right, rather than a specific function for that one. So all of those, again, are before the exam. It's important, I think, to have them practice some of these things before the exam, before they get to it. So on this one, volumes there, you know, just kind of looking at, here's your graph rotating around this line. What is, you know, which integral would represent that solid? A lot of them do pretty well with this one. So. So you'll see, you know, this is pretty standard in terms of homework. So a lot of them get this correct. They have the right reasoning going through. That's not really a huge surprise. I would say, you know, the more like the, you know, typical homework questions where you just, here's a graph, here's what you're rotating, you know, grab the integral. What is that going to be? You know, that's pretty, pretty used to that sort of thing. Again, this one's kind of like that other question, only no graph this time, just the description. So they have region R in quadrant one with a single point touching the y-axis. I did change this a little bit later on. They are having a little bit of trouble with that. So to say there's a circle touching the y-axis, and they seem to, at one point, they seem to get that a lot better with that rather than this just generic region R. Some of them were drawing a line and just having part of that line touch region R, and it was touching both axes, is kind of weird. But using circle instead of just region seemed to clarify that a lot. Let's rotate around the y-axis, generate a solid. Students using horizontal strips, which are they using? So they're having to kind of see what would a student use. Some people just say, well, it'd be best to do it this way, which isn't the way the student's doing it. And so they kind of missed that out. There's also some misconceptions on if the point is touching the axis, is it really washers or disks? So a lot of people will pick disks because there's no hole in the actual object once it's been done. But you know, as long as one slice has a hole, you're gonna be using washers. So that can kind of differentiate between those guys. And then with respect to X or Y, that sort of thing as well. So again, you know, pretty similar results across the face-to-face. The online section did not do quite as well, although they do have quite a bit more with the, you know, partially correct, but still not that great in terms of fully correct reasoning on that one. This one, again, is one I like. So we'll do one more poll for this one. So you got a region and you're trying to pick the axis of rotation for this one based on that equation that's right there.
And Lee, we have a question after you get through this poll.
Okay. I can answer any while we're waiting for the poll. Well,
sorry, I was speaking up. So we got a question. How did you administer these questions in your online classes? Do you have a group class discussion after getting the class results in your online classes? Which is the LMS used at Whatcom Community College? So it's two there.
Okay. So at Whatcom, there's actually two choices for the LMS, either Canvas or WAMAP, or that's what it's called in Washington. It's My Open Math for the rest of the U.S. It started in Washington and then kind of migrated out toward the rest of the U.S. So WAMAP is what we call it here. And that's what I use in my class. So these, you know, I kind of, you know, just took snapshots from Desmos and used those as the pictures, and then put those questions in. And then from there, what I do with those is the pre-test questions I'll give is like a quiz, a timed quiz that students have to do. And they have the explanations that they can check after the quiz is over. So they can kind of look through the reasoning on those. And then on the exam, I have those as kind of timed exams that they can do online whenever during a certain day that they want to do them. And then those again, I'll just have kind of responses that they can check to see what the correct reasoning should have been on those guys. So there's not like a big whole class discussion online. I do do a lot of discussion forums kind of prior to the test on homework problems and quiz questions that, you know, people ask about, but a lot of it is just through kind of the feedback of the test. You know, here was the reasoning I was looking for.
Okay, so another question.
Yeah.
And that is grass and shaded regions. So all of your grass and shaded regions are done in Desmos?
Yes.
Right, and that is good for, that is what we have for right now.
Okay. All right, so we'll go ahead and end the poll. And correct answer is C. All right, so this one, if you're looking at the formula, should be dy, so horizontal strips. And then it's going to be shells. So you're going to be rotating either around a horizontal line down here below C or above D. And then you just need to look at this y minus m. So if your y is subtracting that m value for the axis, then that m should be below your rectangle height, which is y. So it should be down here below C. I get all kinds of answers on this one. So it varies quite a bit. I would say every choice gets picked, maybe not as much the right of B, but I get left of A, above D, below C. I get a lot of them on those guys. So so it's just one question that I like on these guys. And if I can get back to, so here again is the results. So for some reason, I don't have a good explanation at this point. The model classes in the fall did way better on this than even the face-to-face class without the models. All of them kind of did better than the online classes are doing. And I should mention, all of the online and the face-to-face have web resources. So we use Calcplot 3D, we use Desmos, you know, try to use all the tools. You know, not just do stuff by hand and things like that, but you know, for whatever reason, I don't know, lot better on the fall sections on that. So we are going to be collecting more data, and I'm going to kind of skip through these next couple just because of time. So this one is just asking about what's the radius of a shell. This one, again, is looking at building with cross sections, and if these are your cross section shapes, then which one's going to have a different volume than the others. And so I'll get weird stuff on these, like, oh, these three are triangles, so they're all going to be the same. The rectangle is not, which is incorrect. I'll get, oh, I don't know what to do with B, so I'm going to pick B, which is not correct either. It's actually this isosceles with hypotenuse as the base, going to be smaller than the rest. I did try to make these. So it does say, you know, the figures are given to help interpret unfamiliar geometric terms. They're not drawn to scale, you know, relative to one another. That would just be kind of a giveaway on that. So rather than fighting with people, oh, I didn't know what this meant, I decided to include some of the figures there. To avoid that issue, but you know, I didn't want them to be to scale on those guys for obvious reasons, then they would know the answer. So there's the results on that one. Again, this is kind of weird. I don't know why this particular class did so much better in the fall, even than the other fall class that was using the models, but could have been just good questions they were asking that particular class. Some student feedback, I think we should talk about that a little bit. So communication, so these were fall and winter 20. These are just the ones with the models for fall, no models, but both were face-to-face. I'm gonna be giving some surveys pretty soon here, but they're not completed yet for the online class this quarter. So I did a 6-point scale. completely agree, somewhat agree, slightly. I don't like neutrals just in general, so that's just me. But slightly agree, disagree, you know, the various regions. So almost everything is very high on the agree scale to some extent. You'll notice that the fall with the models is, you know, a little bit higher in a lot of cases, especially with the handouts and the models versus the web resources. There's quite a bit of difference on that one. Generally feedback was good, even though they were doing, you know, some of these activities, they seemed to enjoy the activities, on these, the concept check questions, you know, helped me test my conceptual understanding. They didn't like those as much, but still, you know, there's, you know, maybe more slightly agrees than the completely agrees, but there's a lot of, you know, agree side of the scale on those even. Connections, forming connections between different representations. The ones with the models, you know, felt that they helped them a lot more than just the web resources that I had. Again, with kind of this first category, the activity handouts, they're kind of nick and tuck on those, you know, pretty similar with those guys, but a lot more enjoyed the physical hands-on models than the web resources. Some student comments on these. The models were brilliant. I'll let you kind of read through some of these guys instead of me reading the whole thing. But overall, it was very positive comments on using the models for these guys. So they really appreciated those. They liked working with them throughout the class, both sections in fall last year. So a few conclusions, right? The guided notes activity sheets, pretty effective with engaging students with the calculus material. The student reactions are positive. I've had some classes in the past where they weren't quite as positive, but those were more like, here's some stuff and I'm expecting you to kind of work on your own. These were more guided than I think the ones I used in the past. The students generally find the physical models more helpful than the web resources. I'm not saying I don't use the web resources in those classes, kind of use both, but there's just something about getting your hands on it that's really nice. And then the conceptual questions, it really helps students think about material in a more conceptual way rather than just rote procedures. It is important they get a chance to practice those, you know, before the exam. But it's nice to kind of have that feedback on looking at how are students thinking through these problems, even from an instructor point of view. So what's coming up next? So some online revamping, right? I don't know how long we're gonna be online, probably a long time in Washington State. So the guided notes activity sheets, I still have those kind of there for them to use online. We are going to be mailing out some physical model personal sets for people to use at home and see how that goes versus, you know, just using the electronic web-based stuff like Calcplot 3D at home. So that's coming up starting in winter. We're going to have several people from some Washington community colleges doing that both winter and spring of this coming year. And again, revising, you know, models and worksheets, those are gonna be added to the Grasp the Math website here in the near future. So acknowledgements, you know, my colleagues, Eric Davishall, Todd Haskell, and I think that's it. So any remaining questions that were out there?
Got one. One last question is how many students are in these classes?
So in these classes are typically about 30 students. We have calculus capped at about 30. They're usually pretty full, sometimes maybe 25, but 25 to 30.
And then another question came in, do students work in groups on some of these activities, quizzes, how are they graded?
So the activities aren't graded, so they're more like kind of guided notes that they have to work through. I let them keep them because I want them using them, you know, while they're going through the homework. So I don't want to be taking them up and then having to hand them back, stuff like that. So they're not graded on the activities, but they are expected to kind of participate. They are allowed to work in groups. If somebody's just really opposed to groups, they can, you know, as long as there's enough models, they can kind of work on their own on it. But a lot of them are designed to be done more in groups with some interaction between each other. The online, they don't get quite as much of that interaction. It's more with kind of the videos and having them work through some of that. So I imagine that's where some of the interplay is coming in with the online is they're not getting to talk through, you know, some of that quite as much as you do in person.
Okay. Models to share with students in each class. That was the question again.
Can you repeat that?
So how many models of each example do you share with the students in the class?
So the models, they're usually like 3 to 4 to a group that will have like one set of models. So they might have like those 4 volume ones that I showed, kind of all 4 students using those models at one time. Usually one at a time that they pass around between each other for those guys. The centroids with the balance beams, those were 2 to a model. So it kind of varies depending on which one as to how many you're gonna be using it, but anywhere from like 2 to 4 is how those go. With the new ones that we're sending out, it's gonna be like 1 to 1, 1 model per 1 student. So when we get back face-to-face, I may also try those out, you know, in the face-to-face with, you know, 1 model per 1 student. They're not quite as big, I would say, you know, the ones are about this big and then they get shrunk down a lot smaller for the personal ones just because of materials. But yeah, 2 to 4 in groups, but they easily could work 1 to 1 if you wanted to do it that way.
Okay, and then the last question, do you have any suggested resources for activities?
Other than the site I shared, I don't. I kind of wrote most of my own activities for those guys. So there is an active calculus book that's out there that has some stuff. It's more for a flipped model, and I wasn't doing a flipped model. So so mine are more like, you know, I'll give kind of maybe a 10, 15 minute intro that goes through some of the stuff on the sheet, and then they'll have like a problem to work on or questions to answer, things like that that they'll use the models for, and I'll float around while they work on those with the activity sheet. So but then I'll kind of come back and, you know, we'll address a few questions with the whole class about every 15 minutes or so. The class is here only 50 minutes. They meet every day for 50 minutes. So it's a short time. It's nice to be kind of there every day, but it is really tight trying to get those activities into that 50 minute period.
All right, well, we're a little bit over, so thank you, Lee. We appreciate it. It was a great session. Just for anyone else still on the line, please join the NerdQuest session to wrap up the day. Have a wonderful day. It was great to be able to do AMATIC virtually in this very strange year. Bye, everyone. Yeah.
If there's any more questions, feel free to email me. So, but thanks for attending.